It's on it now. Gordon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this special meeting of the Board of Directors of the Ecuador Region Clean Air Agency for October 11, 2023. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Stephen Jones.
Present.
John Devaney.
Present.
Janet Vicio. Jose Trevino. Amanda McKinney. We do not move on.
Thank you. We'll watch for joining the board members joining the Zoom. Were there any changes to the agenda? None. So there are none. We'll move into public comments. The public will be invited to address the matter on any relevant board on the matter relevant to our business. At this time, we ask that you state your name and any item you wish to address. Comments should be limited to 3 minutes per person. And for any member of the public wishing to address the board, please come towards the laptop so that we can make sure that your comments are captured by the microphone. Are there any public comments at this time? Any public comments at this time? No public comments? Next item on the agenda is the review and approval, if we had a quorum, of the minutes of the July and September meetings and the payroll, fiscal vouchers and payroll authorization transfers for July, August, and September. You can't take action on those, but are there any comments on those or questions on those at this time? Anyway. Move into our discussion then on director engagement with the board and vice versa. Mr. Burns, did you want to make any comments on that, or do you want to kick off that discussion?
No, I think
I did send a memo to all members of the board, which is included in the packet, reminding you that we had a discussion at Mr. Thornsbury's performance review around making sure that we had information presented in a clear way. But also there were some follow-up items for discussion around how we give guidance on what we like to see as a board. So I think that there is a need for some discussion of those issues. Specifically, how much detail we want to see in discussion at our meetings. I personally like to read documents because then I can think about them and come back and read them again and then just confine myself to questions at public meetings and in the oral discussion portion. But some people absorb information better and then orally in the discussion. But doing both at full length can be problematic. We use a lot of staff time preparing memos and then a lot of board time and public meeting time discussing the same materials that are presented in the public forum. Wanting to avoid duplication of effort, I think we should discuss which we should emphasize. The oral briefings at the meetings or the written memos in the board packet, which are available to all of us as well as the public. I've expressed my preference to getting the written form and then having a briefer discussion at the meetings. Dr. Jones, do you have anything you want to say about that?
I would agree with that also. I do like to have a discussion, and sometimes the written documents for me, I need some further explanation. So I personally like to see it written and then open the discussion. One of the records. One of the recommendations we made with the consent agenda to be eliminated during the session to shorten the meeting. Am I clear that would be intended?
Well, I think what I was hoping to describe in that is that for some entities that have a large number of sort of repetitive items that come up, there can be a savings. For us, we don't have a large window. We meet once a month. We have some vouchers and go through. Typically, there's some question about one of those anyway, which typically would bring it off of the consent agenda anyway to discuss those questions. And so I'm not really sure it's lost, particularly adds substantial dividend for our meetings. I don't think there's much savings by restoring consent agenda in our particular context.
So what would we get the data? I do review all of every month.
Yes.
But I want to make sure they're in here.
Consent agenda just means do you approve all of the items each or each in one block, or do you have separate votes?
Sure.
It doesn't change the material that's provided to you. And it's, and by the way, you've been getting that information that consent agenda hasn't been around for almost a year. So all it is just a question about how those are voted on, whether they're voted individually, discussed individually, or as a topic.
And the motion will be made to approve multiple items in a single vote. Which is not set up on that. Then you have to take a vote to separate. Any other comments on the question on the final briefing materials? Or everything
could be in here all day.
Yes.
One of the other questions that's come up was how long to spend in board meetings and whether it would be better served by having the actual business meetings shortened and having study sessions make a return. I think there has been preference by Mr. Thornberry if you've been doing to combine those together to have all the material in a single meeting, which also avoids that uncomfortable current. Sometimes we've had a conclusion of a study session and we go like almost for 10 minutes before the business meeting. I have not found that having the combined discussion and presentations along with the business in the regular meeting to curtail discussion. But did anyone find that it would be better to have a separate study session with the return engagement? Any preference for that?
That depends on the topic. You know, some of the discussion series we had in the past had a lot more detail than we're listed here, and had a lot more of the where, why, and wherefore that needed to be discussed. More of an explanation of the board than it was any serious discussion about the final outcome of this particular topic, but oftentimes there was a lot more detail in some of our study sessions. And they were informative to me, but it still can be handled within the board meeting. And it is there, yeah.
Related to the question of time management is, if we have extended question and answer and discussion, and it's hard to predict how long our meetings will last. And looking at the agenda, sometimes it turns out our meetings go by in 15 minutes, and sometimes it's in 2 hours and 15 minutes. That can be a challenge, I think, for some of our members who are heavily scheduled, who then may not know if they're going to be able to plan something after this meeting. There are two ways, I think, to approach that. Either the chair becomes more aggressive in time management, limiting the amount of questions, which I think is not ideal. Alternatively, Mr. Farnsbury suggested we could try moving board meetings to later in the workday. So this might be the last item on your agenda for the day. I think those of us who work a more regular office schedule, that might make sense. But I was hoping that our public members would be here for this discussion because they're often the ones with meeting engagements also. A lot of elected officials have plenty of meeting engagements as well, and predicting when the workday ends will be challenging. And I certainly don't think we want 8 p.m. diligence. Dr. Jones, do you have any thoughts on how we can manage the time down?
Well, some of us start really early, and then we'll be done at 4 or 5 o'clock. That would be my comment.
Keeping farmers hours myself, I couldn't agree.
So possibly later, but not a lot later.
Do you have has it been inconvenient for you to have this change of plan for this meeting?
Well, today's my birthday.
Oh,
I was just asked earlier. 30 to 7 o'clock this morning. I have an hour and a half minute. I've had a long day already. This is tough for you to get through. I appreciate you being paid the other one. Volunteer.
No, I'm not hearing from comments that those were not here. So I think the consensus of those present is that we don't need to make any major changes to our schedule. I would say that I think that the fact that we've had two meetings in succession without being able to achieve a quorum means we have to have a very frank discussion with some of the board members about how to arrange their attendance and their appointment of alternates. Making sure that those board members who are not going to be present have appointed the backup or consider whether they wish to remain on the board. I understand that scheduling challenges facing elected officials, especially, but this is important business. We need to make sure that we have full participation so we can deal with the business of the agency and do that business.
If I might interview, please. Those two topics might be a good pair for the area to discuss sort of when, where, and how, and means, how that might help foster better board participation. So that might be a good conversation to have at the end. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. I think that Mr. Barnesbury and I should discuss reaching out directly to those board members because I don't want to wait another month and hope that they're here to participate in the discussion and not be being set on a final point.
I might give
you a little bit. You and I will do a fast follow up. Final item on board member and director engagement is this is an item that following his performance in the industry board where he raised as a concern, which is we frequently ask for follow-up items as board members from staff. He's had a lot on his plate, and sometimes we are not always clear, and it is not always clear, when an individual board member's request is an individual request and when it's above board's request and how we should prioritize those relative to the many other things taking up his time and the agency staff's time in general. Sometimes those requests are delegated. I think that we should probably make a point of having a discussion around this is an individual's request or a board request. When we make those, I think we just tended to say we'll follow up when one of us asks without objection. So, ordered in a motion, I think that we should probably have that discussion each time we make those requests. I think that I will, as chair, I will try to force us all to think through those and not just move on from there when we make those requests.
Yes, I if I can add a couple of remarks to that particular topic, I've been party to this slightly and seen it in many other cases where there can be issues of priority when there are board member requests to staff. Lots of times there's an assumption, and I think you alluded a little bit to that, that it's easy to stay open, fine by me. And there really isn't a lot of discussion about it. And that goes on for a period of time, and staff just simply takes up the slack by addressing that issue before thinking sort of internally. But eventually, what ends up happening is and when it goes bad, what I've seen is you will have the board anticipating certain things that have been done. You will have a board member who anticipates their request to be addressed. You will have another board member that anticipates their issues are being addressed. And then it becomes, if there's a conflict over those, then it becomes, well, which board member has more clout than the other board member, and that's left to staff to sort out. And this is that sort of scenario, and there are a variety of sort of variations on that, but at heart, that is a really great scenario for how you lose your executive director. For one of two reasons, either it becomes an intra-board issue with who's getting their issues responded to them, what they believe is coming back by staff or an unknown infection. And that can split the board, and eventually, if the majority of the board is satisfied with how staff are handling that, that's how they take the time to talk about work. For executive directors who are smart enough to have seen this go on at other locations, they will quickly recognize this and find another place to go so that they can choose to do so before they're worn out. So
that's what I meant by clarity. Because sometimes when John says, well, let's look into that, it's not exactly your need. What you're going to look into, and it may be quickly for another board member doing it, I understand as well. You need more clarity in your question. Better discussions on the board members is coming.
I'm happy to do my best to fulfill the request, but I don't want to get caught in between board members. But typically, how I've suggested you handle the past is if you have a personal board member request, and I think that how you couch the term is important, I would be happy to try to address that request as I see fit within the broader scope of my obligation. That is different from a request and requirement for writ large, which I consider to be an obligation. And those are different. If board members individually believe a request has turned into a demand, that's where you can get it for writ large.
Any further observations on our comments on how we can better communicate as board and staff?
More clear direction.
All right, any other comments? No,
other than just, my objective is trying to deliver the board whatever it wants. So, my interest is only in making you feel like doing that as efficiently as I can do the toys that I think.
That will move on to discussion of 2024 general fees.
Going to 2024 classification.
I have an earlier version of the agenda, yes. I try not to print things more than once.
There was a slight title change, just a little more accurate. Okay, so this is not a substantial item, but there will be forthcoming discussions about this, but I wanted to at this point, because we're approaching, we'll have two more meetings and then we'll need to adopt the structure for next year. So I don't want to be too long to make sure that what we're doing and where we're heading is aligned with what the board is expecting. So it doesn't require any action of the board other than I just want to get a feel for, is everybody okay with working out doing this? And I can sort of run through this quickly if you want, or if you just have questions you want to ask, that's fire away.
I read the memo, so I was just going to ask questions.
Yeah,
so
you can ask questions. So under the emissions story, that, for example, one day again, I was looking throughput equals one ton of emission. Can you give me any kind of reference for that? Is that gasoline or the water?
In that particular case, that was gasoline, which is the biggest liquid product that we have.
Okay, and the ton would be the electricity used, or you calculating the?
No, that literally is calculated on. Broadly speaking, again, the visitor category. But the idea is how much literally tons of emission are generated by the operator. So if you have a process that runs, you put a certain number of gallons over a day or a month over a year, that's what that essentially does.
The scoring method that you use here, Have you picked those for something that EPA and the college can be able to add, or do you consider completely underground?
No, these were done entirely in-house. We did not really find an equivalent to what we were trying to do, because we're sort of stepping in a little bit in between this, the all-in-one category and I think, as I discussed in at the November meeting in 2022, or perhaps the December one, also trying to avoid actually trying to go out and figure out what, you know, what each individual, you know, registrant is actually, you know, because then you have to staff up in order to actually do that with any increased positive rate of sneeze and kind of circulate them. So we have tried to come up with a way to do this that we think is reasonably fair, equitable, and balanced, accepting the fact that in any given particular case, it probably isn't, but it is better than what we have. And this is not something that that is fixed. If we will implement this next year as an improvement over our process, but as we go through things during that year of implementation, we need to find that we need to adjust this, because we find areas where our estimations prove not to be the case in practice. And so we have a very, I think, likely that there will be some adjustments when we talk about this at the end of next year. This has become sort of a regular thing. What we intend to set up with this is that we'll have all of these categorizations done. That will be a little bit of a heavy work class, because we have to go through all the regular. Going forward, when a new registrant comes in, we'll simply classify them right at the beginning of the revenue system. And then every year, because that will be in a spreadsheet, we'll have an opportunity to go in and apply and adjust that. That will flow through all of them. We will provide the board with an updated list of what those look like. I think that will be a relatively easy way to address the issue. It does allow us to make adjustments on the buildings. And it will also keep our fees moving along in a small increments. So building our practice can be amended to a 30% increase, and we'll just do that regularly as we go along. I think it's also something that we can explain as reasonably defensible to the public and to the registrants. Say and I'll just use this as one example, but if you're a small mom and pop, you know, convenience store, let's say, with gas, you should probably be paying less than the guy who's got, you know, 10 parts, you know, $1 million, and, you know, moving a huge amount of material and generating a lot of issues. If that's what you try to do with this, is to work at it from that perspective. How do we fairly allocate, which we're supposed to do, fairly allocate the expenses of the pollution control agency across the state?
You took a lot better way than we did with that, in my report. Are there any of these total fees that exceed the synthetic work limit fees?
At this point, we have not gone through all of our registrants, because before we took the time to do that, I wanted to make sure there weren't any objections, so I'll be better able to answer. I would say that it is highly unlikely, because the synthetics are basically a major, aka Title V, that has voluntarily restricted its operations so that its emissions fall below the threshold for a Title V. That those are all going to be pretty sizable folks. We have not, you will notice that what we used to call the complex miner has gone away. They are now all minor sources of varying levels. But we did leave the synthetic as its own group, because it is a little bit of a unique group. They're really, you know, they're sort of minor in a way because of how they chose to operate, but a really kind of five. So we've left those alone, because we think it makes sense to sort of isolate them because of their.
I only had a couple of questions. The compliance scoring, is that going to be based on your estimate or on actuals?
So there, almost everything sort of is estimate, because if you actually got down to tracking exactly every minute you spent on anything, you spend that time actually tracking it. So these again, they're broad categories. So generally speaking, they're falling well within the boundaries of that. There isn't a lot of swing there saying, well, you know, is it really 3 hours and 45 minutes, or is it really 4 hours and 15 minutes? Let's push them into this category. We try to come up with broad groups. I'm not saying that there couldn't be certain ones that might be fairly close to the threshold, but generally speaking, most of the ones we look at falls well within. So even if we were slightly off in the estimation of what we're seeing, probably would be unlikely to substantially change the category to break it.
It does. Right. So the follow-up question then is if that is basically an agency determination for that portion of the scoring which results in the fee, is that subject to any kind of administrative appeal if someone disagrees with our estimate on what kind of fee they would be? Oh, there's no way that my project would take that long for you. I object. I want you to review my scoring and my fee.
There isn't a lot of statutory language that specifically identifies the way you have to come up with it. There's some sort of broad language that speaks again about equitably and requiring everyone to sort of carry their share. But there isn't in this particular case, there are lots of those where it is very specific, but not here, in terms of what you have to do. So I'm not exactly sure on what basis one would make the claim from sort of the legal standpoint of saying, well, you do not follow, you know, regulatory or statutory language in terms of how to determine that this was fair. So my answer to you would be that I don't think that there is sort of a legal exposure to that. Now, obviously, our intent with this project is to fairly do that. So if we had somebody who did this, I think we have really grossly, you know, miscalculated, then we would certainly sit down and talk with compliance staff, which is how we're coming up with this, by the way. We are talking to people who are going out in the field to say roughly about what are you spending when you are dealing with this particular entity. Now, that could vary slightly from year to year, and again, unlikely to publish the category for that person. But certainly we would review it. If there was reason to believe we had miscalculated, then we would adjust the category.
I think that you might be well served by documenting that those estimates are based on past experience with the same project, just to make clear that this is not just a wild guess by agency staff.
Agreed. We are not. I'm not sitting in my office, not having gone out to most of the registrants. I feel that's probably about a 3. No, it is actually based on some real world, just not in a specific account saying, you know, we spent Y. There are some assumptions in here about what's being done in the field. There are assumptions about how much time is being spent internally in the office, stuff in force, because that's being a inspection report. Frankly, after you come back to the site, typically there's a read through and review of the permit conditions before you go out to the site. That is also included, again, broadly speaking. We are not, you know, walking in and saying, okay, it's, you know, 10:39 in the morning. I pulled the permit file. I read the permit file for the next, you know, 20 minutes. I went and asked an engineer who's been 5 minutes, like that. We're not going through at that level. At some point, maybe we'll decide if we want to, but again, the problem becomes if you spend too much time doing that, the savings that theoretically you would get gets eaten up by the amount of additional staff time you're using to try to figure out how you can get rid of it. I'll give you just a quick example without boring that in a prior life, when I was responsible for managing a building, we had a building with multiple tenants, and we had one electric meter. And we got a bill at the end of the month, and we divided that up by the square footage of the tenant spaces that we lease out. We've got a request from one of the tenants. I think the guy next door is using way more electricity than around there and overpaying for the part of this town. And I said, well, we can certainly have you put in individual meters, but understand that every time there's a new meter base, you get a monthly charge of $89 just to have the meter base in place. If you truly think you are spending $89 more a month on your electric bill, then that might make sense. If you do not, that is probably not a good solution because you will spend $89 a month in order to say probably what will end up being about it. So that is sort of where we are.
I have one more question. So how do you get a point raise higher than 10? If these are the three criteria that you're basing your formula on, your class for, if I would take the worst scenario of each of the three, I don't get under 10.
Your point is well taken. We had adjusted the scoring down, and that did not make it through to the upper one. So we will take a look at how we structure the classes. But you are correct. What we did was we came up with sort of what our idea was for this, and then we took a sample, a representative sample of registrants from different sizes. Different complexities and different industries. We pulled those and then ran through those numbers to see whether or not they seemed reasonable given what we would expect in our knowledge of those. And so we got those back and we found some areas where we needed to make some adjustments. We made those in the lower detail part, but that did not transfer up into the classes. So your point, Marilyn, would be the move.
I just the comment I agree that this looks like a much better way of allocating fee costs. I think that you should probably move ahead with having it prepared for us take action on the community. I'm guessing that one of the questions from other board members would likely be what the overall distribution would be of fees based on our past year's permits and what the overall income effect. On permits, we see an increase, or no change in our total.
So in response to that, a couple of things. Number one is in terms of scheduling, the current plan, assuming that we can do that, and there are a couple of things that are currently unknowns. So it's I can't say this for certainty, but the plan currently is to come back with a much greater level of detail as we sort of actually apply this. Or sort of agreed that generally this is going to go, then to come back with much more detailed numbers at the November meeting. Actually, we'll announce full public hearing on it. We'll have much more detail on that with the idea of them adopting it formally in December for application. So that's kind of what I'm imagining for the schedule. In terms of how much money this will generate, we don't anticipate it will be substantially different than what we were planning on for 2025 as part of the 2024, as part of the discussion that we had in the two-step process in November and December of 2022. So essentially, we're taking sort of what that looks like. Sort of the pie is still the same size, but the wedges are adjusted.
So the next, any other questions? Thank you. I think that schedule makes sense. The next item on the agenda is a discussion of controlled burn policies. That was a request of Commissioner McKinney, who was present. I'm happy to hear the report now, but we wish to defer this to a future meeting when the person, the board member, requested the discussion to be present, or would you like to?
Has there been a big change in the way that this is handled? This is not like a memo that you handed out years ago.
I will tell you what little I know. So Commissioner McKinney did make a request that this be placed on the agenda. I had a number of other things, there wasn't a particular request other than a general one, which I think Jeremy was saw that it was just a request for a report on this. I wasn't entirely certain what the details were on that. It was not, as we discussed earlier, a board level request. Because it hadn't come to the board at that point, and I wasn't entirely certain of what specific questions were going to be asked or were needed to answer. In light of that, I provided the document called Notes on Forest Management Prescribed Burns. It's really just a review of some of the statutory regulatory language that applies to it, just so that the board members could at least understand what the regulatory environment is for. I will say that I think it is related to an ongoing request from the Forest Service to conduct essentially forest fuel management burns in order to reduce wildfire risk is the broad thing that they're doing, most of which is managed under the smoke management, which I think the latest version of that is dated May of 22. Our role is relatively limited. So again, I'm unclear as to what McKinney's question was about it. We don't have any regulations that apply to this. I'm not even sure. I don't even know if we could, because I'm not entirely certain the authority and how the authorities are handled under the smoke management plan. But we don't have any adopted local regulation related to this. We rely on states' regulatory language and the smoke management plan. The only thing where we have some tangential connection to this is that there are some limitations on what can be done if there is an air quality burn ban in place by the agency. But the conditions under which there is, I think that the statutory language refers to as impaired air quality, is largely defined in statute. We have to do a little bit of work in terms of taking a look at what the meteorological forecasts are, what current conditions are, what the monitoring is currently reporting, those kinds of things. But sort of the standards against which that's met are set in statute. That's not something we make up. We just debate whether or not we will breach those standards. So there is a modicum of discretion by the agency in terms of how that gets done, but it is not free reign by any stretch. We are relatively circumscribed in what we do. And then finally, sort of on top of all of that, there is also the question of enforcement. So if the Forest Service, for example, is obligated to follow state law and local law, and there is burn ban, and the Forest Service burns during the burn ban, then does the agency have an enforcement obligation, or is the enforcement obligation handled by the Department of Natural Resources, which is the entity that permits or approves burns by the Forest Service? That I do not have clarity on at this point. That would be the only other area where we would be. Right now, their current request has their first request to this was back, I want to say, late spring or early summer, kind of leaning forward for this term. And the concern was that they clear these forest fuels and frequently end up placing them in sort of side piles, for lack of a better term. And then maybe the burn at some point. Obviously, the summer is a really bad time. Torch goes off unless you want to be responsible for burning down that state. So they don't do that. This then pushes them into fall. You get into fall and go a little bit further, and then you eventually get into winter and get snows on the ground and can't burn during the winter. So they are limited to sort of shoulder seasons. overlapping that can be burn bans that have been instituted at various times during some of those critical shoulder periods. And essentially, if I understand it correctly, and I'm wary of speaking on their behalf, but essentially the idea was, well, if we're going to be able to get this material consumed, not have it sitting around as fuel for next year's wildfires, we are going to have to, or will likely have to, burn during. At present, it is my opinion that state law is flatly does not. I think the state management plan can support that, but I'm not a legal scholar in that particular aspect, and I have been trying to bring myself up to speed as quickly as possible. And hopefully the suggestion that somebody has evidence to the contrary, but I cannot find it. And that appears to be the rub. That is not something that we are instituting. That is the state level. So this is not at our discretion. I'd like to add more, but I'm afraid that's all I have.
Executive Director's Report.
Okay, so yeah, I've got sort of several things. One, to talk a little bit about education and outreach. So I have brought some show and tell, and actually I brought it on there and I had to shut it down to the meeting place, but I didn't want to show you people that I have a meeting. Those are flyers for an EPA event. I won't go over a lot of details of that. It's in the staff report, sort of that you can read up on. But we did attend those meetings, talk about the wood stove replacement program, and we've got a handful of responses out of that from people who have been interested in taking advantage of that program. I think there was some hope on EPA's part it would be better attended than it was. We certainly, I think, would have hoped that it had been. But there were, I think, a couple of complications to that, one of which was the event that was held here in Granger was actually held unbeknownst, I believe, to EPA the day before a substantial health fair was being held. And so if you are a person who cannot attend every event that comes to town, you might have had to choose between those. And the health fair was, as I understand it, from people who attended it, was fairly well attended. So that may have sort of stolen some of the thunder. It literally was the next day. So there may have been sort of a scheduling issue with that. The Wapato event was better attended. I would not probably call it well attended from the numbers, but it was better attended than Granger. I think if there's a lesson to be learned, and certainly one that I'm taking more than that, is that probably clean air does not carry enough weight to drive attendance by itself. That it is better if it is partnered with other agencies or entities or events where there is an ability to draw a greater number of people in because there are a number of events that are taking place sort of simultaneously. So people can come and it's not just for one purpose, but it is potentially for several purposes. So that's just my personal takeaway from that. But nevertheless, we did get some response back from that, and we haven't contacted people with this stuff. It was the replacement for it. So I think it was good. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more. It had been our choice, but we did what we could. Did want to talk a little bit in that context about some of the materials. So we have had a little conversation before this. I will give you another example. So those are handout, basically handout materials, flyers essentially on various topics that the agency has had. I was not particularly satisfied with them. So there was not a lot of fun. I wanted to give you an example of what we had. Those, and they are yours to keep. Those are what we actually did develop and hand out in relatively short notice at the event. And we are working on others. So when we were approached by EPA and asked to participate in the event, I went to take a look at what kind of resources we had available to us. And discovered what you first saw. And so I immediately set about to try to come up with a sort of design and then develop content appropriate for what we were talking about at the event. And that is sort of the result of that. But we are also, as time permits, and that is a pretty big gap. But as time permits, we're also working on several others.
A little bit concerned that nuclear fallout is one of the feeding systems or home air factors.
That was the intent of that was only to illustrate size. I was not meant to suggest you should be concerned about it. So the folder that I just handed to you, and so you don't need to really bother looking at content for that because none of it is finished. They are sort of all works in progress, except for the Spanish language version of the documents that I gave you. But the rest of them will give you an idea of the things that we are looking at and what we are trying to develop to have in the house. It will be... This is a long-term project. It's not a high priority. We are sort of trying to put in a little bit of groundwork so that as events come along, we can sort of try to finish up the content for it and make it available. For example, there will be an opportunity potentially to partner with Yakima Public Services and TerraSites and Chain Landfill, but a particular TerraSite is there, the authorized asbestos recipient in the county, to have some information on demolition, renovation, and asbestos removal that we can put in together with them. We also provided the information that you have in your events there for the event. We also have at one of the vendors who participates in the Woodstock program, we provided them a copy of those to place at their table. We also place one of these where we're going to get a second one of these that are slipped on the side. You can fill out and ask for information. It goes on one side and the other. And then some information about what you can get. We had several people who left those, both in the box and the staff that were there. And then we've also started the media advertising for the Woodstove replacement program. As a matter of fact, Mark Edler was out at the radio station this morning. We've already had a couple of calls. So those are all things that we are. They're trying to do to address the outreach portion of our as much as we can. And again, as time permits, there are a lot of other things to do, and content creation is very challenging. Both just from the information that you try to provide, the space that you have to fit it into, which has to fit, and then the translation to Spanish. And then, of course, Spanish is a somewhat more verbose language than English is in terms of the written word. So you then have to address how to fit that in, too. So it's a more convoluted process than it sort of looks like. But I feel dissatisfied with what we've come up with. I'm hoping the board does as well, but certainly I'm happy to take criticism and comments.
I noticed the comment box. Do we have an electronic submitting comments form for request for information?
No, we do not particularly. The assumption is if you're on the website, you will send an email or you will call. This is just mostly just for people who happen to be there so that they can write down some information right on the spot and don't have to worry about having the number. I suppose we could instead of hand out cards with them, but we tried to get an idea of what they were interested in so we can respond a little better than this.
Well, the technology hasn't really caught on successfully before COVID. QR codes have made a comeback, and I noticed a lot of young people, especially, use their phones to quickly grab contact information and send any questions, comments to other sites or gather information quickly rather than trying to remember to input a web address. So we might just think about getting one of those. Put that on the long list of things we need to do.
Well, I will make a I will make an note myself. The next item was the lit smoke reduction program. So again, I won't bore you with a lot of details with that. Most of it is in the staff report. Just to say that the Yakima Regional Clean Air Agency, in its application for the 2025 biennium, scored the highest of all of the clean air agencies in the state of Washington with respect to this. So I think the board is pleased with that. We have worked very hard to make good progress on that. You can see by the statistics. I think that we are able to do that. And we are already sending people off now on the spot right now to take the calls as of today. So we think there is progress with that. We've also worked a little bit on we have improved our documents with that so that they present a little more refined appearance for the folks that are seeing them, incorporated the Garden Bogo, for example. So we are again continuing to, as time permits, make progress on sort of our professional appearance. Are there any questions about the woods? The grant or anything?
Every time you get one of these, there's a supplemental, and I can't remember why we get a supplemental.
What happens? I'll just tell you what's happened in the past. Whether that continues to be the case or not is a little bit of a question. We've done a lot of work in this, so there will come a time, whether or not it's this year or next year or the following year, we probably will have the sort of log and diminishing returns start to kick in. People will replace a lot of stoves. The more you do, the smaller the pool of ability to go after. So, but it has not happened yet. Typically, what happens is you go through the year, we usually hit in the biennium. The first year, we hit pretty hard. We spend the majority of the money. Not saying the overwhelming majority, but the majority of the money in the first year, we use what we can in the second year, and we typically consume it roughly about midway through the second year, which then leaves people who are still interested or on the list waiting until the next group. The Department of Ecology, which manages the program, usually goes out roughly around, say, March or so of the binding ends in June. And so about March or just before the end of it, goes out to all of the awardees to say, essentially, did you use your money? If you did not use your money and someone else has the ability to put it used, please return the unused portion essentially to Ecology, and then we will award an addendum to those people who can use it. And typically we have a waiting list. We did last year, we did get some additional funds, as you can see, and we immediately went to a number of people who were on a low income list and said, we've got some additional money, let's get it in. So that's why, that's how that happened. Any other questions about that?
On next.
National Ambient Air Quality Standards, I don't have anything to tell you. I put that on there because I was hoping that I would have something to tell you. As I think we agreed with this, discussed before, EPA is in the process of reviewing whether or not and how much change, particularly the annual average for particulate matter. And that was originally slated to occur in spring or early summer of this year. That came and went. The last thing we heard was fall. We are now sort of firmly in the middle of fall. And I was thinking we might have a statement about it. There isn't any, and so we can move away. My hope is we will have some sort of statement on that soon so that we can then begin to assess sort of what the impact of that is and the effect of what we need to do. So there will be a cheerful coming in the community. I don't have this in my report, but I just sort of wanted to mention it just because it came to me as I was sitting in my office. Almost 1 year to the day, I was sitting in this very room, or standing, as I said, standing in this very room, addressing the two of the room here at that time. So I thought it would be just interesting to go back. So at the time I was here, the board had asked me as a candidate for this meeting to talk briefly about some of the things that I would do if I were in the position. So let me kind of close out. Just see. So I just wanted to briefly go through them because I thought it was interesting, a little bit informative, and it also gave me an opportunity to take a look and see whether or not I was being true to myself. So one of the questions was dealing with public complaints and inquiries, and I said at that time that I would actively listen, identify fundamental issues, investigate, and conduct research, explain other factors involved, ensure quality and integrity, follow statutory requirements, and embrace transparency. I will not be so presumptuous as to judge myself on whether I've done those or not. I will leave that to others. But that was what I said, and I hope that I have at least made good progress toward doing each of those. I talked about working with other agencies, respecting the autonomy of other agencies, identifying common goals, maintaining communication, providing supporting information, considering alternatives, and exercising reciprocity. Again, I will leave that for others to judge, but I certainly have tried to do that. Talked about some of the other agencies that I would look at connecting with, fire departments and districts. That's an objective statement, so I can say yes, I've done that. Washington Department of Natural Resources and U.S. Forest Service, I have not reached out to DNR yet. I have to Forest Service, City and County Planning and Building Departments. I have with planning, not with building yet, that's coming. Washington Department of Health and County Health Department. Again, not so much the state, but certainly the county. Yakima Valley Council of Governments and WSDOT, I have not done either of those yet. Department of Ecology and EPA, I have done both of those. And Public Electric Utilities, which I have not. So I have some unfinished business there to do. And then the last item was helping individuals and businesses. And I said partner with planning building departments, ensure adequate field interaction, update website resources, engage with civic industry and other organizations, participate in events, utilize local media, and develop material for youth in schools. And that is a work in progress. I have done some of those. Several of those are still on my list of things to do. But I think it's every once in a while useful and helpful to sort of go back and say, okay, am I actually following up on what I said I would do? And I wouldn't probably give myself an A, but I might give myself a B minus. Maybe a D. I hope the board feels I've done that.
Yes. As they say, no plan survives first contact with the enemy or reality, whichever you prefer, and whichever phrasing. I think you've dealt with a number of other crises that have arisen in the meantime. So.
Well, there were a couple of that you didn't mention in the interview process.
Yes, there have been a few. But I will note that in the board packet, I'm concerned. I know both the August and September monthly activity reports still say from the Office of the Interim Executive Director. So
apparently we still have some form that has yes. some work to do.
Well, yes.
The last thing I just wanted to mention, just to give the board an idea of the amount of effort that's gone into the last year. So a typical, if you're figuring your sort of 40-hour week, typically in a year's period of time, you put in 2,080 hours. Last year, and I mean literally from September 12th to September 11th, I calculated out roughly 2,654 hours, which is the equivalent of an additional 3 months in a 12-month period, to give you an idea. So when I tell you that there are things to be done, I guess I would just say I'm not. So that concludes my report.
And yes, thank you. And we appreciate your hard work, but as we also said in the review, that's not sustainable in the long term. And we need to make sure that the agency is properly staffed for the amount of work. Any other comments or questions?
Kristen has taken a job had a really great opportunity and took a job with another organization here and another public agency in the county. We are currently looking at, I did a couple interviews here just the other day for a new person to take the staff accountant position. She is still working for us part-time and is doing some off-hours work while we try to transition through a special sort of kudos to Isabel Trudell, who has been helping with that. I think she knew a little bit. She's been doing quite a bit of that. And Chris, again, has been helping graciously to get us through the interim period until we bring somebody else on board. And I also want to step back a little bit, too, because I didn't mention this, should have. Kudos also to Mark Edler and Isabel Trudell for the work on the Woodstove replacement program. They have just done really a great work on getting that program to where it is today, making it successful, and no longer a money loser for us. We used to pour in a lot of time and get all these contracts involved. So they have worked real hard to tie up the loose ends and make it a really successful program, which I think is evident by the fact that we are getting substantial funding for it.
So did we gave Krista had been for the BB report still has that calculation.
Yes. Yeah. She is still technically a part-time employee until we bring another person on and replace her, at which time that was to come on board. I still review the stuff that goes out. So there isn't anything that's going out over Chris's signature that I am not seeing. So I go through AP and payroll and all the rest of that on a regular basis.
Any other items of business? Other than wishing Dr. Jones a very happy birthday.
Thank you.
There's no other items on the agenda, and so I will declare us adjourned. Thank you.